Welcome to Coin Talk, live from the Crypto Cave. I've been looking forward to this conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about Petrocoin. It's been all over the news. Very entertaining, if somewhat depressing, story. Coin Talk is produced in partnership with Medium. All kinds of great crypto writing over at me.dm/crypto. And of course, you can find every episode of Coin Talk at medium.com/cointalk. That includes transcripts. You can always get in touch with us, hi@cointalk.show. I'm, of course, Aaron Lammer. My co-host is Jay Kang. I'd like to introduce him. He is lurking here in the Crypto Cave. But first, a little music.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, February 27th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $10,733.
Jay, hello.
Hey, what's up, man?
It's a lovely day down here in the depths. I've been actually trying to keep my crypto radar slightly turned off for the last weekend.
Why?
I got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to stop looking at the price. I'm going to limit myself to like once a day.
So you're going like basically paleo crypto.
Paleo crypto.
Like OG, like I don't care about price. I want the price to go down so that people can start focusing on the tech. That's where you're at right now?
No, more I'm kind of actually like these stories are kind of capturing my imagination more so than the financial elements.
So you're in the I'm just a storyteller phase,
yes,
of crypto.
I'm just weaving the dream catcher to catch the narrative of Bitcoin in the 21st century. Okay, so we wanted to talk about Petrocoin.
I think this is our third attempt to talk about Petrocoin. This is not our fault.
Yeah.
The Petrocoin story does keep changing. I don't know. I think that there's probably no more interesting story just in pure ramifications and what it could mean to the crypto space. There is nothing funnier in terms of the meme potential than Petrocoin. And yet it seems to encapsulate so much of what people are talking about in crypto and what people are scared about with crypto that I just think that we should talk about for a bit.
It's a classic story that I've read several articles about. I'd like to consider myself at least somewhat knowledgeable about the space it takes place in, and I'm still hugely confused by. Break it down for me.
All right, so Petrocoin is Venezuela's attempt to create a cryptocurrency, right?
Yes.
Venezuela, the country that is racked by U.S. sanctions, the economy is completely
failed.
For a
minute there, I thought you were going to say that Venezuela was wrecked.
Oh, yeah. Well, Venezuela is wrecked, yes. R-E-K-T.
Nationally
completely wrecked.
Wrecked,
yes. A lot of it because of policies by Nicolas Maduro, who is the president of Venezuela, but, you know, a lot of people would call him more of a dictator. All right, so Maduro decides that he's going to create a cryptocurrency, and it's going to be called Petrocoin, because the one thing that Venezuela does have is that it has, I don't know why this adjective is always tagged to it, but the adjective always uses vast oil reserves.
A lot of people say it has larger oil reserves than Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but like, why is it always vast with oil?
I always like when it's just one country that's always the comparison. The way people are always like, it's an area the size of Connecticut. It's like,
I've never in my life heard it's an area the size of Connecticut.
Really like a giant forest.
I've heard the size of Texas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on.
All right. So moving on.
So Venezuela is experiencing one of the most tumultuous recent economic histories of anywhere in the globe.
Yes.
The massive inflation, total runs on all sorts of goods, no money to import anything.
Yeah, and their solution to this is to create an ICO, or one of the solutions, right?
They're not calling it an ICO, though.
No, they do call it
an ICO. Oh, they do call it an ICO.
Yeah, yeah, they're saying it will be the biggest ICO ever, which I think at this point, if you believe any of the numbers, which there's no reason to believe any of these numbers,
yep,
it is the biggest ICO of all time. So last week, Maduro goes in front of, this is a video I think that we have on our Instagram page.
Yes.
But he sets up this sort of theater, right? And all the press is there. And he walks around and he's turning on. Do you know that Instagram feed? Kim Jong-il pointing at things or yes. that old Tumblr.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, except it's Nicolas Maduro turning on mining rigs.
Yeah, I would say that there's definitely an aesthetic to the to those kinds of videos. It's usually an angle.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of times it's like an autocrat gesturing to technology as if they understand
yeah,
it. But
yeah.
what they're gesturing to, in this case, Nicolas Maduro is gesturing to a bunch of Bitmain Ant9 miners.
Yeah. So he's turning on Ant miners, which, you know, for reasons that will come up very soon, make no sense.
So for you listening, the ant miner is like the classic, like every cryptocurrency rig you've seen, which is basically a long tube with a fan on it and a bunch of graphics chips. It's not exactly a technology you can point to and gesture grandly.
It's not like a fighter jet.
It's not
or
an interballistic
ICBM.
Missile.
Yeah. So Maduro then sits in front of this gigantic logo, which was also very funny. Like the logo was like 7 times bigger than it needed to be, and announces that Petrocoin in its first day of the ICO has raised $735 million, which is a lot of money.
Good ICO.
Yeah, it was a great ICO.
Okay, so I usually feel like I'm on like enough ICO Reddits that when there's really like a token for sale, I hear about people who like actually bought some.
Yeah.
Are there accounts of people buying Petros? Like, well, will I be seeing it on Cryptopia?
Okay. Just now I was in the office and some guy I work with who will remain unnamed, but a wonderful young man.
Yeah.
And he's very into crypto. Told me that he had been thinking about buying Petrocoin. And I was like, you can't buy it in the United States because buying Petrocoin actually violates U.S. sanction laws. He was like, oh, yeah, I figured that out like halfway through. And then I was like, I probably shouldn't buy Petrocoin or else I'll be violating U.S. law. So there's presumably almost nobody in America who is buying it. But Maduro says that there's a lot of interest in Europe and Asia and South America and other parts that has contributed to this $735 million, which nobody can confirm because the government hasn't released any data or any sort of numbers, and also nothing has moved on the blockchain. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah. So it's a typical ICO in that no one has any idea what's going on or who's behind it or what you really get.
Yes. That is the long and short of what has happened so far.
Okay.
Okay. So the problems with Petrocoin are myriad.
Yes.
The first is that the way that Maduro was explaining at the beginning, it essentially made it seem like if you owned a Petrocoin and you went to like the Petrocoin store or something or whatever it was, like the Petrocoin exchange, and you gave them a Petrocoin, they would like reach behind the counter and pull up a barrel of oil and give it to you.
And this is like a financial concept that does have historical roots.
Yeah.
Like when you talk about oil futures or something like that, you're talking about like the value of a barrel. There's a present day barrel of oil price. So when he presented the idea, my understanding, and as usual, I leapt to a, like an overly rational explanation, was like, oh, it's like a token that you can exchange for one barrel of oil, whatever the value of barrels of oil that are. And, you know, like we've talked about Tether.
Yeah.
One Tether is always supposed to be worth $1. This is worth 1x. X equals that day's barrel of oil and Venezuela price.
Yes.
That's not what it is, though, right?
No, 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 no. The first iteration of it was essentially him saying that it is actually pegged to the physical oil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that it really did seem like if you went in, you're like, hello, sir, here's my Ledger hardware wallet. As you can see, I have 3 Petro coins. Could you please hand me my 3 barrels of oil? Like, that's what he made it seem like in a bad description. It might have been bad translation, but at some point he transitioned to basically saying, this is not actually the actual oil. Come on, guys, that's fucking crazy. It's actually the price of oil, which is manipulated all the time in Venezuela. And so it is another sort of layer on top of it where this thing becomes more and more vaporware and less commodity-backed cryptocurrency that it says it was.
Well, to the discussions we've previously had about Tether, and go back and listen to that episode if you're curious, the big accusation against Tether was, oh, they don't actually have a dollar for every token that they've issued. We don't really know how much oil Venezuela has, and we also don't really seem to know how many tokens they're issuing. These tokens are not like mineable, right? This is like they're printing them. They're just making as many as they want.
The farce of Nicolas Maduro turning on Bitcoin miners,
which
would be actually a very funny Tumblr for a very, very small audience. I don't even know if Tumblr really still exists in that sort of way.
But everything about that idea defunct.
The problem with that is that all the coins are pre-mined. It's on the NEM blockchain. I think there's 100 million of these things.
Yeah. It's like, what does 100 million represent in the overall oil reserves of Venezuela?
I have no idea. I guess you would take the total value of the oil reserves and divide it by 100 million, and each petrocoin is worth some level of that.
Forgive me if I've completely misunderstood this, but the one sort of use case that's been presented for the petro is that people in Venezuela will be able to use petros to pay their taxes.
Okay, so yes, you can use petrocoin, right? Yeah. And in Venezuela, where you cannot buy groceries with the bolivar, and where there are all sorts of runs on any type of staple food, where it's very difficult to get rice or flour or even clean water right now.
Yeah.
The one thing that you can do with the petrocoin is not buy groceries or buy like a car. The only thing you can do is pay your taxes. And I was trying to think about what is the least appealing use case that would make it so that people do not want to buy a cryptocurrency. And it's like, you can use this thing to pay your taxes.
Well, and also if you unpack the flow of money in that, so you get paid in bolivars, which are basically worthless, massively losing to inflation at every moment, which you can't really buy food with, and then you pay taxes on your bolivar income in petros?
Yeah.
If petros have any value, you wouldn't want to do that. The only scenario in which that's a good idea is if petro loses value against the bolivar.
Exactly. So, like, the Venezuelan government's pitch to the Venezuelan people to please buy petro coin is like, okay, you can buy this stuff, and then you can use it to give it back to us.
Yeah, it's like if I was like, hey, Jay, do you mind if I pay you in U.S. dollars, but you have to pay your income tax in Bitcoin?
Or in Lammer coin, that can only be used to pay Aaron Lammer.
Yeah.
I'd be like, would you like to buy Lammer coin? I'd be like, no, actually, Aaron, I don't really feel like paying you for anything. So why would I buy Lammer coin? It is fundamentally the most sort of confusing thing that I have looked at in the ICO space. Some things are just outright scams and they're not confusing because you're like, oh, this is clearly a scam, but this is backed by a government. And you would think that given the amount of press that was around there and given the desperation of Maduro's government and the ambitions of it, which was to raise like billion something dollars, right, that they would have tried a little bit harder to make it make sense. Now, I don't know. Maybe it does make sense in some sort of way.
I mean, it makes much sense as a lot of ICOs.
Yes, but those ICOs are clearly scams.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, it falls somewhere in the realm of ICOs that don't make sense, but they only make sense because you realize that they're scams, and you're like, oh, it makes sense because nothing in here is actually real. It's all a scam. So if you zoom out, like, 2 pixels, then it's a scam.
Yes.
Petrocoin, you can't really do that because it's like a bigger project. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think that all makes sense. I mean, this is also not totally unprecedented. Governments issuing really junky bonds based on their junky economies that often like go bankrupt.
Yeah.
A lot of these crypto stories are basically just a crypto spin on an age-old collapsing economy, like controlled by a dictator kind of tactics.
I feel like North Korea might do this because, you know, North Korea has a ton of mineral reserves.
Yeah.
And they're not really quite sure how to mine it. Maybe perhaps what they could do is create a cryptocurrency that is based on their unmined mineral reserves.
But thanks to our editor, James Nicholson. Okay. Go ahead.
Last thing I wanted to bring up about the weird world of petrocoin is that things keep changing every single time they make an announcement. So forever, the white paper said that this is going to be an ERC-20 token that was on the Ethereum network, right?
Which would have been a big deal for Ethereum.
It really would have been.
Oh, what's on Ethereum? Venezuela?
Yeah, in the entire Venezuelan economy. It changed without telling anybody at the last second to an NEM blockchain. And there was all this funny confusion where there was like this sort of Reddit sleuthing and they're looking at the photos of the Maduro turning on Antminer's meeting. And they're like, that guy works for NEM. But then NEM had to come by and be like, actually, we've never seen that person. And that person does not work for NEM. And then people come back, be like, is it on NEM or is it not on NEM? And then come back being like, we do not support any sort of state government, and we have no influence in politics, but perhaps Venezuela has decided to put their cryptocurrency on our blockchain. So in the end, it ends up being an NEM token. NEM, the only reason you and I have ever talked about it on this show is, A, one of the cryptocurrency girls, the J-pop band that we featured in an early episode, is named after NEM. And the second reason is because almost all of the NEM in the world was stolen, right?
Yeah, I think $523 million of NEM was stolen.
Yeah, the coin check hack.
The coin check hack. So I did a little looking into NEM just because I was curious after this. And one of the things I didn't know is that NEM is another pseudonymously created currency. No one really knows who made it. It was originally supposed to be based on NXT and was going to use the NXT code base and then decided to do its own code base. There's a variant of it that's being used as a corporate blockchain in Japan. It's not particularly well known to be putting the country of Venezuela on.
Yeah, well, that was proven by their PR people who were going around being like, we don't know who that guy is. And then like couldn't really answer the question for a while if the entire oil reserves of this country of Venezuela. This actually is very, very arguably illegal in Venezuela. And the opposition party in Venezuela has pointed to a very, very strict and standard law that says you cannot issue debt against the oil reserves or any sort of natural resource commodity. And Maduro has, done what a lot of crypto people say and said, it's not debt issuing. It's a cryptocurrency. It's a new thing. And so half of the government of Venezuela and a lot of the people of Venezuela have basically decided that this thing is not even legitimate, that it's illegal. And that sort of calls back to the history of cryptocurrency in Venezuela, which is that like around 2014, 2015, because the Bolivar was going so crazy, a lot of people in that country started turning to Bitcoin and even opened a Bitcoin exchange.
And there was a big mining and a big crackdown on mining by the government.
All those people got arrested. And if you talk to some of them who are a little more conspiracy minded, they'll say that they stole all their miners, they stole all their Bitcoin, and that they were just using it to do research to do this Petrocoin. I would think that the sort of rebuttal to that would be that if they had actually done that, they might have done a better job.
Well, no, but there was a lot of conspiracy theory even at the time that they were raiding people who were mining in Venezuela and taking their mining equipment, and that there was government mining facilities set up that were using free power and were mining for the government, which is also a story we've heard about North Korea.
Yeah. Well, look, Maduro had to get those fucking miners to point to and turn on from somewhere, right?
I feel like by the time you're like a strong man and you've dissolved the opposition, doing a shady ICO that breaks your own regulatory stuff is like, it's kind of a small potatoes bet.
It might be a false flag to hide.
Although maybe in like a sort of like Nixonian sense, it's like in the end, it was a cryptocurrency scheme that brought him down.
I will say that if I was going to go on Venezuelan conspiracy threads, I would think that there are probably a lot of people saying that this is some sort of false flag operation or something like that. So we do not say that because we are not conspiracy theorists.
No, I don't know why you would buy that. I mean, like, okay, if I was to tell you, hey, this is a cryptocurrency that represents basically this, and I was like, the future of the Venezuelan economy, you'd be like, pass. Hard pass. Like, why would someone
controlled by the Venezuelan government?
What is the case for wanting to own a cryptocurrency pegged to the value of Venezuelan? Is it just because it's oil that it doesn't matter where it is?
Well, I think that it might appeal to those of us who, you and I might be closer than we want to admit, who feel like if the shadier something is,
the more potentially profitable
okay,
it might
I'll
be. Buy that.
As long as we can time the pump before the dump or something like
that.
Well,
I guess you could say it's a little bit like the era of privatization within post-Soviet Union era, where people, all these Russians became billionaires by buying into state assets that were getting privatized. I mean, on some level, if he's selling off all the oil in Venezuela to the private market.
But he's not even selling the oil. It's just currency pegged to the oil. Like, you can't actually go in and get that barrel and put it on a plane and ship it out.
Doesn't that mean that if you own all of the tokens, you own all of the oil? No?
No.
Then I definitely am not buying.
No, it is pegged to the oil. So all these questions really bring up one larger question, which is that it feels, at least to me, who's doom and gloom about all things crypto, that we have crossed a Rubicon, right? That a government has finally become involved in crypto, and that perhaps of all the governments in the world, this is like a top 10 worst government to be involved in crypto, and that we might start seeing crypto technology being employed by other states in some sort of malicious or scammy sort of way. I don't know what the actual ramifications it is. I am not so gloom and doom that I think that it's going to have any effect on the health of Bitcoin. But man, it's kind of a bad story, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I was, when you said, this is about one of the worst governments, I immediately was like, North Korea would be the worst government. But one of the things that made me wonder is, like, if you're NEM or you're Ethereum Foundation, would you want Venezuela on your blockchain? It seems like taking on a big risk. Like, it seems like some of these events, such as the NEM hack of $523 million for the NEM, are situations where there's going to be a huge political push to wheel it back after a hack or do a fork or something to, like, mend the chain after some sort of a catastrophe. And I just don't know if I'd want to be part of a scammy Petrocoin ICO. I would kind of be like, yeah, like, let someone else's chain experiment with this. Once you screw it up with North Korea and Venezuela, we'll get, like, Finland on the blockchain in, like, 5 years. Like, we're cool.
I think that NEM probably does not have that much choice in the matter.
That was very Trumpian how I used Finland as the good country.
Yeah, what the fuck, man? I don't know if they have that much of a choice, you know? Yeah. If somebody wants to use that blockchain and, you know, copy and paste and issue a cryptocurrency, like, what real...
Is that the case that they can't reject someone from using chain like that?
I mean, that would be a pretty big statement, I think, if they did.
Yeah.
But at the second time, you know, this is kind of, you're, like, sort of saying, like, you know, let's say you're, like, a dude, you know,
yeah.
And you make, like, $15,000 a year, $20,000 a year. You live in your mom's basement.
This is my basement.
Yeah, this is your basement. I'm sorry, the basement that you rent. Like, what are you really turning down? You know, like,
yeah,
maybe it's not the perfect person who comes into your life, but you're probably going to sort of take on anything that is going to help you that comes through that door.
Yeah.
And I think that the government of Venezuela doing a $735 million ICO, quote unquote, maybe, in one day.
Yep.
That is a thing.
Like, they didn't have any other better options.
Yeah. And also, if it works, that's awesome, you know?
If it works, all kinds of... You're going to see so many countries, like, doing ICOs if this even vaguely works.
I mean, I feel like the sort of cat is out of the bag on that. I mean, if Maduro is able to prove at all that this is anywhere close to $735 million and that he was able to skirt U.S. sanctions to try and get some sort of form of outside funding into his country,
yeah,
why wouldn't you do it?
I mean, one of the things that I saw people bringing up is... It's ultimately a somewhat cynical enterprise because you can't buy, I don't think you can buy Petrocoin with bolivars. You can't use Petrocoin to, like, prop up your life savings. You can only buy them with Bitcoin and Ethereum. And the gateways to Bitcoin and Ethereum are primarily US dollars and euros. And these other, so they're basically, like, taking foreign money in for the most part.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. They want to bring in foreign investors into Petrocoin.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can't buy them with bolivars. Is there really any evidence this is going to, like, help people who live in Venezuela?
No, there's no evidence. And I think that's the biggest problem, which is that it seems like, you know, you and I joke quite a bit about me starting CanCoin.
Sure.
And then disappearing.
That was a joke?
Well, look, I mean, it depends how well the ICO goes. But yeah. Starting an ICO and then bouncing. I mean, yeah, we've seen it happen. It happens once a month, it feels like. I think this is the Venezuelan government's version of this. Like, I think that maybe one day you will type in venezuela.gov into, like, a browser. It'll be completely blank, and in the upper left-hand corner, it'll have, like, LMAO in the corner, and they'll all be gone, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it feels like. It feels like a one-time cash-out type of deal or an emergency fundraiser. And look, I kind of give credit to Maduro because of all the ways to do a completely corrupt fundraiser and to bring in sucker money. Like, an ICO really is not that bad. I actually can't think of anything that might get people who are a little bit stupid to buy into it.
All right. Second country to do an ICO.
All right. The second country to do an ICO.
What are the odds we're looking at here? I feel like all the best odds are going to be Caribbean countries.
Yeah, for sure.
Can you imagine a scheme? It's a tax shelter, but you can get citizenship if you have 100,000 tokens, but you can trade those tokens for, like, tax dodging and citizenship.
Yeah. I mean, that would also go into our money laundering ETF.
Oh, definitely.
Actually, basically everything we talk about in this show, Petrocoin is definitely in the money laundering ETF.
I'm going to say like Virgin Islands coin.
What about the tiny European countries that you only see during the Winter Olympics, like Andorra, Liechtenstein?
Yeah. I mean, I could also see, the craziest one, the like dark horse, but this is huge if true, Switzerland.
Swiss coin? I do not see a Swiss coin.
Monaco?
Monaco coin, yes. I feel like they should print out blockchain-based tokens that you can exchange for citizenship if you want to compete in the Winter Olympics under their name.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some good outlets in Europe. Estonia, of course, also a lot of blockchain activity in Estonia.
That is true. All right, so the third thing I think we should talk about, and this is the sort of big question, if this was This American Life, this would be when like Ira Glass comes back on.
This is American Life. Ira Glass would come and say, why are you guys talking so much about cryptocurrency? Yeah. This isn't really a story per se. Like,
I don't even know if this is an episode. This is when he would go and introduce the reporter to do the big point, right?
Yeah, what's the big point?
The big point is, what do we really make of the fact that a government is able to do this? And do you think that the movement in crypto right now is working against Satoshi Nakamoto's original vision of decentralized stateless currency? Because in my opinion, a lot of the news that we're hearing these days does seem to kind of, like, people are kind of pushing that idea of stateless decentralization away.
I think that we are seeing the coming conflict between two extremes. One, which is the most extreme original vision, which really I fundamentally believe that at its core, Bitcoin is destructive to the state. I think the idea of people keeping their money outside of states is a very provocative and dangerous idea. And I think because it's a provocative and dangerous idea, there's going to be a counter movement to co-opt it and to do something just as radical for the state itself, within the state itself, to assert even greater control. I mean, I don't think it's any accident that we're seeing like this rise in like autocratic leadership around the world. We have an autocratic leader issuing a scammy ICO token. All of these storylines feel like they're going to converge, and there will be both increasing numbers of people trying to live in ways that are antithetical to the state, and then I think the state getting deeply involved in all kinds of blockchain stuff that also presents like a new vision of society.
Yeah, co-option I think is the right word, right?
Yeah.
Most co-option happens in anything, whether activist movements or anything like that. It happens voluntarily. People sort of relent.
Yeah.
And I think that that's happened quite a bit, you know, like the sort of rise in the price of Bitcoin, the growth of companies like Coinbase, the amount of money that people now have invested in these things, the lack of security, all that has sort of professionalized Bitcoin in a way. It has helped prop up the price, but it certainly has made the idea of decentralization like almost a fantasy, you know, like if you have Bitcoin, you have it on Coinbase, like you don't believe in decentralization. You actually believe in an extremely centralized bank, which is kind of the only bank, you know?
I think it's set up for competing visions to fight each other though.
Yeah.
That's always been part of this idea of consensus and part of this idea of voting with the nodes in the chain itself. It's almost like it expected to be co-opted and sort of built controls within itself that are at least ideally checks and balances against it.
I think that is a generous way to read it, because I would say that I think that the Bitcoin community has essentially self-co-opted in that sort of way. But I think that the saving grace would be that, and maybe actually this is similar to what you're saying, I think the saving grace is that the technology, if treated correctly, is still a decentralized vision, and it can't actually be co-opted at some level, right? Like, you can have Bitcoin off of Coinbase. Like, you don't need to use it. You don't need to use a ledger. You can just print out your keys and laminate them, put them, like, in your floorboards or whatever you want to do.
There are mega churches, but you also can just build an altar in your own house and worship as you see fit.
I do think that as states get more and more involved, that there's going to be a civil war within the crypto community. And I think that the cypherpunks and the original anarcho-capitalists, basically everyone who only eats meat, right? They're going to have to basically redefine the line of where they are. And I think that's going to be pretty hard because a lot of them are super rich now. And I think that redefining that line will probably force them to have to like relinquish some of those riches.
I think religious movements are kind of the right parable for this kind of thing. There was no way that this extremely valuable and extremely intriguing project was going to sit out there and take in billions of dollars and not attract the attention of Silicon Valley and not attract the attention of corporate America and American government. What's sort of unique about this form of technology is that it can potentially exist both ways at once. It's not like one thing, you know, it's not Apple and trying to wrest control, who's going to be the CEO. Potentially, like, all of these visions can be lived out at once, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially since Bitcoin is infinitely forkable.
Yeah.
Like, there might be a fork that, you know, takes a more philosophical route to it. Or even, like, you know, if 2x or 4x or 8x or Bitcoin Cash becomes a dominant player, you know, you might see a reversion back to, like, very small block sizes as a way to sort of push an ideology. I think all of that is really important right now, though, because I do think we're, like, at this point where we're kind of losing the script. We're kind of losing the message of what it's supposed to be. And everything is about price speculation. Everything is about incoming government regulations. Everything's about sort of this funny meme world. And I kind of miss, like, the raging anarcho-capitalist, fuck the state, let's bank the bankless and create our own weird commune style of Bitcoin messaging.
I feel like that's what you would have said when we were racing past 15,000. It was like, oh, now it's all about price speculation and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, and now it's back down again. I feel like by the time I start even recognizing the narrative of what's happening, we've actually like moved on. I feel like we're like several steps removed from that like raging libertarian.
I don't even know
where we are now.
But I also think that that sucks. Not that I agree with the politics of any of this. I don't, you know?
Yeah.
But it also is kind of what made Bitcoin cool because it was this alternative world. Now I just think that it really has become kind of the centralized thing. It's not just the vision of the original people who are working on the project, but it's also become centralized in the sense that, like, you know, now the government of Venezuela thinks it'll be funny to do an ICO.
It's funny. This is like a classic, like, New York was better right before you moved there kind of
situation.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Better, like, when? Like, when we got into it, like, less than a year ago?
No, it wasn't. I would say that before I bought Bitcoin or before I had skin in the game, but when I was reading about it or when I was, like, chasing Dorian Nakamoto around in his car,
yeah,
you know, like, and I was interested in Bitcoin, but I just didn't own any.
Yeah.
I think it was cooler back then.
It's a little more diverse now, and I don't mean gender or ethnically.
It's definitely not gender diverse.
But I think they're like the story's getting bigger and broader. I feel like there's just like more and more angles and tentacles all over the world.
I can accept that.
Okay, so will you be buying Petrocoin?
Definitely not. Because I do not want to go to jail for violating US sanctions.
What country's ICO would you buy?
I mean, I don't think I would buy any country's ICO.
I'd get in on some like Canada, maybe.
Canada? Why Canada coin?
I just seem stable, you know?
Because
Canadians
you're
do not
growing,
seem...
You're growing fit.
Canadians do not seem like scammers to me, in my experience.
Canada coin is like pegged to the production of hockey players and maple syrup.
It's based
syrup.
On the price of a grog grade C syrup.
I can't think of a coin that I would honestly buy. I think I would probably go back to like my degenerate side and buy the most speculative country. Okay, last prediction I want you to make.
Shoot.
Does Petrocoin ever get distributed and traded on exchanges? Because right now, one of the news items that has come out has said that they have found the Petrocoin wallet and it's all still sitting there.
I think it probably is going to eventually be traded somewhere.
Yeah.
If Trump coin and Pepe coin can make it to Cryptopia, Petrocoin can make it somewhere. Do we know what the logo looks like yet?
Yeah, it's like a Bitcoin logo.
Yeah.
But instead of the B, it's a P.
Very creative.
So we have all the links to the articles that we discussed and the Maduro pointing at Antminers video on our page.
Yeah,
right?
we're going to try and start putting out more stuff. So follow that Instagram at Cointalk Show.
Yeah, I think our Instagram is honestly the most underappreciated part of
And we could do a lot more on it. There's a lot of hilarious crypto video out there.
Yeah, it might be the one part of our entire enterprise that I would point to and say, like, hey, this thing is actually good.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. All right.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, February 27th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $10,733.
That was Coin Talk. Thanks very much to all our listeners. We're produced in partnership with Medium. You can check us out at medium.com/cointalk or just search for us in any old podcast app under the name Coin Talk. Thanks to our editor, James Nicholson. Oh, yeah, and check out that Instagram at Coin Talk Show or send us an email, hi@cointalk.show. We'll have shows for you every week, sometimes more than even once a week. I will see you soon.